This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Live and Learn with me, Dashran Johan. After months of delays and frankly poor reasoning, finally the BN, PN coalition, whatever you want to call it, this time led by Prime Minister Ismail Sabri Yaakob, announced that Undi 18 will be implemented swiftly. Now, Law Minister Dato' Sri Dr. Wan Junaidi Tuanku Jaafar mentioned that the Election Commission will proceed with implementing the lowering of voting age from 21 to 18 as ordered by the High Court. And this is without having to wait for the government to decide if it will appeal against the decision. Now, and on top of that, on the 29th of September, the Election Commission also notified soon-to-be voters to verify their personal information for the pre-registration of automatic voters that will be held from October 1st to October 31st. So finally, some good news on this front. And joining me on the show today to discuss everything concerning this is a regular guest on our shows, Kira Yusri, the co-founder of Undi 18. Welcome to the show, Kira. How are you doing?
Hi, Dashran. Always good to be back. Thanks for having me.
Okay, first up, congratulations, Kira. I mean, this has been a long journey for you, right? Not just for you, your fellow co-founder, Tharma, and your entire team as well. So how are you guys feeling now that the lowering of voting age and the automatic voter registration has finally been implemented after so long?
Yeah, I think it's a mix of like vindication and just relief, to be honest. I think we've been working on this since Tharma and I were students ourselves. And, you know, and now I think we are both 27 and 28, you know, 10 years after the 18-year-old age to vote. And I think it's just it's a huge relief to finally see our efforts and work coming to fruition. You know, because we've done a range of things from like, you know, social media campaigns, from political engagements to protests, and if, you know, and finally using even the courts to ensure that our target will be achieved. And I'm really glad, and I really welcome the decision by the Law Minister to not appeal. I think it's a recognition that, you know, they understand that young people's voices are valuable and they need to implement it as soon as possible.
And in fact, this has been, you know, a journey full of ups and downs for you guys. You know, at this, it took a lot of effort to, you know, get this. You know, because to amend the constitution, you needed bipartisan support, which you guys really pushed for. With the y'all got YB Said Sadeh on board, and then he, you know, convinced people of both sides of the aisle. The amount of times you guys had to engage with various politicians, with other stakeholders, but even then, after it got implemented, you know, we went through the whole drama of this past year where there were constant reasonings, pushbacks, there were protests. Y'all even like sued the government, took them to court, and all these kinds of things, right?
Yeah.
Why was this so important to you? Why is this, and on top of that, why is this a important constitutional amendment?
Yeah, so it's interesting, right? I think when Undi 18 first started, many people didn't see the value of the campaign. And you know, it's not like, and I think when you compare it with many institutional reforms, people always talk things like, you know, corruption is more important, gerrymandering is more important, reaching out to rural voters is more important. And I don't deny that these are all equally important areas that we need to look into as well. But I think what's interesting is that if only, you know, when Undi 18 was passed in Parliament and implemented almost immediately, or there were transparency in how it was being implemented, I don't think people would react this way today. You know, I think it's because they use very flimsy excuses to constantly postpone and delay the implementation, something that to many people should be very easy to implement. I think that's why many people, people who didn't believe in us back then, or people who were just like, you know, pretty lukewarm about it today, are like, oh, how can you not just do Undi 18, right? You know, if you say that this doesn't make a difference, you know, this is only, you know, just, it's not that big of a deal or not as important for a reform, why did it take so long?
Mm-hmm.
Why does it take seemingly so much hurdles to get over for it to be implemented? So I think the government's responses throughout the journey of Undi 18 has also accidentally played a role in making it a lot more important to many people. And I think, which is why, you know, I think just this year and last year alone, we've gotten so much support for Undi 18 from people of all ages, you know, and even people or politicians who didn't really believe Undi 18 before this, they are now on board because I think a range of reasons, right? But I think one of them being is that it's ridiculous how it's being used to just suppress youth voices.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kira, the previous administration, right, like you said, you know, gave all sorts of reasonings or excuses as to why this couldn't be done despite the constitutional amendment. And they were very confident with their reasoning, right? Technical issues that you cannot separate Undi 18 and automatic voter registrations, all sorts of things. And they brought up things like, you know, more research needs to be done. The youths are not ready. They're not smart enough. They're not engaged enough. But after public pressure, this new administration, this current administration, has moved relatively swiftly to implement it. Signing the MOU, the opposition also made it clear that Undi 18 has to be part of, you know, the government's agenda moving forward. What does that signal when just a few months ago, all sorts of reasonings were being given that it couldn't be done?
So interestingly, I mean, this current administration is helmed by Ismail Sabri, which is an UMNO politician, right? Mm-hmm. And I think for the past few years, actually, UMNO has been very vocal in supporting Undi 18. So I'm not sure, but it could also be a factor where there are pressure within UMNO to implement Undi 18 as well, which is why, you know, this could be the reason why they didn't appeal and they are looking to implement it as soon as possible. But even when looking at the previous administration, which was helmed by Mugini Yase, UMNO politicians like KJ and YB Rizal Marikan was also very active in pushing for it in cabinet itself and in the public. So for me, it's like, it could also be that, you know, they are, UMNO is supportive of Undi 18. And now that, you know, their representative as prime minister, you know, it makes no sense to further delay any longer. But also beyond that, I think what it signals is that, you know, overall the country needs to prepare for a younger electorate. I think, you know, it's what it signals is that, you know, when election comes around, whether it's 2023 or 2022, is that, you know, young people's voices cannot be ignored anymore. And I've seen, you know, politicians on both sides actually now are moving towards preparing, to how do they want to engage young voters. You know, I think I saw someone actually tag YB Ong Kian Ning and say, oh, now he has 300 plus voters in his constituency. And what I hope to see is that this sparks discussion among young people about gerrymandering and non-proportionment, right? Mm. Because why would, you know, a seat, the YB Dr. Ong seat has so many voters compared to others, right? You know, I think now that young people have a stake in the larger ecosystem of our democracy, you know, we not only have to just participate, but we also have to educate ourselves on and understanding what this landscape looks like. Because it's going to change really, really drastically. And, you know, while we have, you know, new parties coming up, and I think I heard one more is coming to be released soon, you know, you see younger activists joining political parties such as Adam Party, JPKR and all that. Mm-hmm. You know, people are shifting, you know, the landscape is shifting, people are getting ready for young voters. So we cannot ignore that phenomenon any longer. And I think thanks to, and if Undi 18 is implemented this year, I think, you know, we'll see some really, really cool, at least for me on the outside, I'm not sure how the politicians feel about it, but some really cool changes, you know, happening within our political landscape.
Now, people say that protests don't solve problems overnight. And that's true, yeah, you know, to a large extent, that is true. But how big of a role do you think that, you know, protests and other forms of public pressure has played over the past year or so in getting Undi 18 finally implemented?
I think the protest that has happened this year, which has ranged from public protests, online protests, and even the Mahasiswa, university students themselves, going on campus to protest about Undi 18. I think I'm not sure, you know, quantitatively how he has contributed to the pressure, but I think what it shows is that it really articulates and demonstrates what people feel about the delay, you know, and not just about the delay, but of course government failure and all that stuff as well. But specifically, Undi 18 is a reform that's constantly being brought up across all the protests that's been happening this year. So what that means is that, you know, it is a reform that people care about. It is a reform that cuts across demographics. It's a reform that cuts across race, religion, and age, and even geographical location, right? You know, people overseas calling for it, people locally calling for it, people in rural, urban areas are demanding for the reform to be implemented as soon as possible. So I think the government, if they are monitoring what people are saying on the ground, either on social media or offline, the message is consistent and the message is clear. The demand for Undi 18 is very loud. So I wouldn't be surprised if they took that into account when considering a strategy within the new government. PH also negotiated for it to be within the MOU itself, but they know how important it is to the people to see this being implemented.
Kira, now that the gears are finally spinning in the right direction properly, Is there anything that you're paying attention to ensure that it's a successful implementation? Because I think there is some worry because it's still in a early stages. They are doing this pre-registration. Some people, there have been concerns just in general because of the Malaysian climate, whether there's some hanky-panky that may be going on, if it's going to be implemented properly, or if it's, and they're going to say there's going to be this problem, that problem, so they can't do it. You know, all sorts of things people are worried about. What are you paying attention to?
I think the concern that I would have is that I'm hoping that, automatic voter registration can be implemented successfully with little issues or problems. Mm-hmm. I think it's always been a concern when it comes to automatic voter registration. But seeing how SPR is being very proactive in encouraging people to check their information and check their data within the database, I think that's a good move. So if anything, people are educated enough to raise awareness about it. So I think the issue maybe would be which is a very long issue all this while anyway, right? Which is whether people's addresses are accurate, whether people know, the tally between the databases of JP and SPR, is it in line? Are people's information, especially those who are, dead and all the stuff, are they updated? I think these are the primary concerns, and these are, issues that Bersih, for example, have been raising for many, many years. And I think under Pakatan Harapan, they've very engaged with EC to follow up and hold them accountable to it. But I hope that, the current EC and the group will also still make sure that this information remains accurate and try their best to update it as much as possible. But I think I'm on the side that we should give them some allowances to clean that up and making sure it's accurate, because now that you are implementing it, you're going to make sure that it's done right and not just rush through something, because you're going to have millions of new voters and millions of people's information at your hand. You don't want it to be like a disaster during election day itself.
On the show with me today is Kira Yusri. She's the co-founder of Undi 18. After the break, I'll be asking her how important it is for young people to be politically engaged now that they will be able to vote from the ages of 18 onwards. We'll be back with more on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today is Kira Yusri, the co-founder of Undi 18. And we're discussing what it means now that the lowering of voting age and automatic voter registration has finally been implemented. So Kira, what would you tell political parties? Because, heading into, over the past couple of years since the constitutional amendment, even as, Syed Saddiq and you guys and your team were trying to convince politicians to make the amendment, there was this sort of worry, although it may have not been explicitly mentioned by politicians, but there have been this general understanding that many politicians are worried that this implementation of this amendment is going to benefit only one side of the aisle. What would you tell politicians who are worried that this implementation will only benefit the other side? But at the same time, what would you also tell political parties or politicians who are very confident that this this amendment will benefit them?
I think to everyone, I would say that it is very... It's an insult and extremely reductionist, I guess, to assume that young people vote the same way. We are not a monolith. We are varied. We come from different backgrounds, different socioeconomic classes. We have different concerns. I'm a young Malay woman, and Dharma, who is a young Indian man, would have very different concerns on and maybe even perspectives on how we see things. Right, and then and even when we form groups like Uni Sabah, Uni Sarawak, they have clearly very different issues they want to see raised by their representatives compared to our volunteers here in KL. So it's not fair to just assume that everyone thinks the same way, everyone will eventually vote the same way. You know, and especially now with information being so readily accessible, we have young people, I mean, people my age and younger will know that we have a lot of choices at our hands. So the real question is, what are politicians going to do to make sure that their policies, their ideas, even themselves are accessible to the people out there? You know, I think with a lot of politicians, especially in like beyond Klang Valley, they focus a lot on like politics, right? When they give they distribute welfare stuff. And while that's not a bad thing, many young people don't live in their voting areas, right? They go back, they balik kampung to vote. So they're not the recipients of these aid. So how will you reach out to these young people, these young voters, right? You have to be creative in thinking about how do you present yourself or present your party or your manifesto to them. And I think that will be the real challenge for the political parties in the next general elections, right? Pakaman Harapan before this, they had, you know, the Buku Harapan, all that. Like, so I think, and while that's great and full of reform and policies, is that how many people even actually are able to read and understand what is being put forward, mm-hmm. right? How will political parties campaign to attract not just the young generation, actually, but the people who were not registered before this, right? How do we convert the people who didn't bother to register to now become active voters and active participants in our democracy? So I think that will be very interesting to observe. And what I would tell them is that, you know, I've done my part in making sure that people have the right to vote. Mm-hmm. Now it is your part to make sure that you get elected because you think you have the right vision for the country. You know, so I think politicians need to shift their mindset from thinking that you know, certain groups or certain voters are fixed deposits or like a given to their side or the other side, but to work hard towards making sure that they get elected. That is their job, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, something interesting is this idea that, you know, the youths are not a singular block, they're not a monolith. Yeah. We have discussed this many times.
Yeah.
What then are you curious about when it comes to now that the youths can vote? What sort of change or, you know, perhaps landscape shifting movements and things like that are you most curious to see when it comes to the next elections? Because different youths are going to vote for different things, but what are the youths as a collective, what are they frustrated about with the current system, and what do you think that the youths will want to change?
Yeah, I think issues that are bread and butter issues, so-called bread and butter issues, will remain consistent, right? Especially, I think, in the angle of young people, it will be the issues of access to education, access to employment, and access to even dignified wages. But I think, uniquely and interestingly, I think for young people, we'll have a rise in climate change concerns.
Mm.
I think across the board, you know, not just in Malaysia, but around the world, studies have shown that young people, what the issue they care the most about is climate change. So I think, and recently with the issues and cases of the Kuala Langat North Forest Reserve, the Pinang Tolak Tamak campaigns, a lot of these campaigns are pushed forward and championed by young people, not just in the Klang Valley area, but outside as well. You know, youth are running their own NGOs to tackle deforestation. They are actively reaching out to orang asli villages to get their input and include them in engagements. So it's very interesting to see the shift that young people's concerns, where many people often assume the environment is not a bread and butter issue, yet for many young people, regardless of their socioeconomic background, education level, or geography location, they want to champion climate change. So I think this is an issue that politicians need to pay attention to, because you know, the moment you know something, you know, they see like, oh, is this area being developed? They go on social media, they tag all the state government representatives and say, what are you doing? What is this? Is this a private land or a government land, or what are you doing, right? So then, you know, and then the government realized they have to immediately respond, right? Especially in the issue of Selangor state government, the immediate response is like, actually, this is either not under their purview or something like that. But what happened is that you have exchange of information, and young people also educate themselves on how our country governs issues on environment and forests and things like that. So then you can push for more progressive changes, like, for example, ecological fiscal transfer, which was noted in Ismail Sabri's RMT speeches as well. So I think this will be one of the very interesting and unique shift in the political landscape next year. You know, you see sites like even advocating for hemp legalization in parliament, right, which ties into both environment, economics, and also empowerment. So I think it will be very interesting to see what young people champion for. But I also think feel that the core issues of bread and butter, like employment and education, will still be a fundamental issue, because these two areas are still severely lacking for our young people. And we suffer the brunt of failed policies in these two areas the most during the pandemic.
And what should politicians do to engage this new block of voters that will come in, which is approximately about 5 to 7 million new young voters? How should they reach out to them? Because we are seeing some, it's very obvious when we go on social media, you know, who is the ones that are constantly engaging with the electorate and who are kind of invisible, which perhaps could have worked, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, but now people are constantly questioning. Do you think this is the playground that politicians must really take seriously? Social media, getting the information out on TikTok, Twitter, Facebook.
I think social media is one thing that everybody needs to focus on. I think not just because it's a great way to reach out to people, but I also think that as users, we have a responsibility to make sure that we don't just be in an echo chamber. So I think it works on both ends, right? People who put out content, like politicians and media, but also people who consume content, who are general users. But I think, however, social media shouldn't just be used to show, oh, look, I'm doing my work, so vote for me. But I think politicians should creatively use social media or all these different platforms to actually push forward more mature policy engagements. We cannot talk about how people don't care about reforms if we don't actively talk about reforms. That's the issue that I always have with politicians who say, people don't care about institutional reforms, especially rural people or Malays and things. I think there's a very reductionist view on things, because if we can educate the general public that issues like corruption, political financing act, all of this ties to bread and butter issues, which it does, then I think we can have a more mature electorate, right? We cannot just talk about saying, we cannot just say that people don't understand things, but we don't put effort in educating them or create discourse about them. So I think, hopefully with more young people being vocal about issues, about policies, politicians will also react the same way, where they know that they cannot just use wealth and influence to win elections, but they also have to be intelligent and sophisticated and smart, because that's what voters want to see. Voters want to see policy discussions in the parliament. And I think social media, in a way, is one of the best platforms to do so, because people can just evaluate what you say and form their own judgments based on that.
So that's what the politician should do, or some of the things politicians should do. What should the youths themselves do now that it's implemented? Do you think that this is going to make young people more politically engaged? Because that is ultimately, one of your dreams when you started on the 18, to have this robust and vibrant culture where people in universities and all of that, young people have discussions about politics. Do you think this change in this constitution is going to bring about that change as well?
Yeah, I think so, absolutely. I mean, I run my own organization in the 18, right? And I have interns who are 17, 18, 19 years old who are applying for internships with UDI 18. When I was 18 years old, I was just thinking I wasn't thinking much about it, right? because it wasn't around me, right? Mm-hmm. Politics wasn't an issue that was very accessible, that was very public access to me. So I think, like it or not, and whether young people are proactively looking for information or not, the information is around them and they are reacting to it. Whether they are reacting positively or negatively, I think that's a different question, right? Whether in a sense where you see more young people react negatively to politicians and the parties, but they are very curious and they want to learn more about policies and issues. I think the fact that young people turned out to protest show that they care about what's happening, and then not just the offline protest, but the online support given to the protesters as well. So while, you see pockets of apathy or jadedness or cynicism, the fact of the matter is the cynicism comes from a place of anger or frustration of seeing government failure or even politicians who have let them down. So while they may not, and I think what happened that, while they are cynical about joining political parties, they have all the more motivation to hold them accountable. And that's the kind of change that we want to see. That's the kind of participation that we want to see in a democratic country like Malaysia, where it's not just revolving around political idolatry, or like, you know, I joined a political party and I'm loyal to it. But you have people who are able to question and challenge politicians on both sides of the aisle on their ideas and the issues and on what they represent.
And what would you tell these younger people who may feel, you know, through no fault of their own necessarily, you know, this disenfranchisement, this jadedness, this just general tiredness with the way politics in Malaysia have sort of been moving around in the past couple of years? Because, you know, many detractors of this constitutional amendment repeatedly say that the youth aren't smart or experienced enough to make political decisions, that they don't understand enough to make a sound decision at the ballot box. I mean, this is, of course, you know, total bollocks. It's a ridiculous argument that have been shut down many times, because even those people who are above the age of 21, we don't make them do an IQ test. Like, I didn't do an IQ test when I went to vote the first for the first time previously. It's not that, you know, they made me take a political trivia quiz before, you know, giving me the license to vote. Mm-hmm. But so with that, it doesn't matter, you know, whether you know about politics or you don't know. If you're an adult, you should have the right to vote. But what are the consequences of young people not being engaged in politics?
I think the consequences that we'll see is that you have the status quo being just continue going on as usual. I think it's not a healthy situation to perpetuate, because what happens that you allow, you know, issues like cronyism, corruption, inefficiency to continue because no one is holding accountable. I think also incredibly powerful in the last general election that despite you know, we had Sheraton move 2 years later, that people now can see you can change governments. It is a possibility. And we may be cynical after Sheraton move, but the fact of the matter is we now realize the power of our vote. And I think it's an extremely important message to keep pushing out, you know, either by institutions, by politicians, by NGOs, because we need to remind people that, you know, no matter what happens, elections is one of the ways for us to amend, to enact change. And, you know, once we can sort of like show the politician that their seats are not secure, you know, we are not to be taken for granted. I think it's a very powerful sentiment to just, you know, to maintain it, and that will keep, you know, our country, you know, I think that will sustain our country's democracy and making sure that we're able to hold them accountable. Yeah.
All right. So now we are in this sort of early stages where, you know, the EC has, like I mentioned in the introduction, they have already told would-be voters to verify their personal information and all of this. Can you sort of break down the steps a little bit when it comes to this? If there is a listener now between the ages of 18 to 21, what exactly do they have to do?
Not only 18-21, by the way, anyone who has not voted, who has not registered before. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the amazing thing now, right, because of the court order by the Kuching High Court, the government is now actually implementing automatic voter registration. So anyone can go to www.myspa.spa.gov.my. It is a mouthful. Or visit any of the SPPA verification center, which is at the post office or anywhere, to check your registration status. It is a very easy step. You just need to input your name, IC, do some little capture verification thingy, and then it will tell you whether it will show you your address and whether it's, and if it's not the most updated, you are able to raise a complaint or object, file an objection, or you can verify your details. And you need to do all of this before 31st October this year. Right. So I encourage everyone, check your friends, your partners, your parents, your younger brothers and sisters. If they're eligible to vote, please make sure your information is updated so that, you know, when time comes, it is not as confusing and it's not very messy to update your information in case, you know, elections does happen before 2023, because, you know, with everything going on, anything is possible at this point. And you don't want to miss out on an opportunity like this to cast your vote. Yeah.
All right. Before I let you go, Kira, would you have a final message for us?
I think the journey so far for Undi 18 has been incredibly surreal, in my opinion, right? To the fact that, you know, we've come from the students talking about these issues on Facebook and with our friends, to finally seeing it in Parliament and in court and now a reality. I think it's a testament to how important young people's voices are and what young people can do when we unite and form a collective voices. I think the journey has not been very easy, But I think what's moving forward is going to be what's harder, right? Which is that how do we ensure that young people continue to participate in the public sector, in our democracy, in politics, because we don't want to lose this momentum after the next general election, right? It's important for people to be educated. And I think, and that's also something that we need a collective to work on. So I think I look forward to seeing more young activists, more young advocates rising up and thinking about issues that matter to them most. Yeah.
On that wonderful note, Kira, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Dashrai.
That was Kira Yuthri, the co-founder of Undi 18, talking to me about the lowering of voting age and the automatic voter registration finally being implemented and what it means moving forward. So if you missed any part of our conversation, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Dashrai Johan, and this has been Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.